Chapter 41. Might be Arthur before as he had time to see, and the blood that forsook her cheek in the agitation of that momentary feeling would have rushed back again at the sight of anyone else just as much as at the sight of Adam. He was not wrong in thinking that a change had come over Hetty. The anxieties and fears of a first passion, with which she was trembling, had become stronger than vanity, had given her for the first time that sense of helpless dependence on another's feeling which awakens the clinging, deprecating womanhood even in the shallowest girl that can ever experience it, and creates in her a sensibility to kindness which found her quite hard before. For the first time, Hetty felt that there was something soothing to her in Adam's timid yet manly tenderness. She wanted to be treated lovingly. Oh, it was very hard to bear this blank of absence, silence, apparent indifference, after those moments of glowing love. She was not afraid that Adam would tease her with love-making and flattering speeches like her other admirers. He had always been so reserved to her. She could enjoy without any fear the sense that this strong, brave man loved her and was near her. It never entered into her mind that Adam was pitiable, to that Adam too must suffer one day. Hetty, we know, was not the first woman that had behaved more gently to the man who loved her in vain, because as he had herself begun to love another. It was a very old story, but Adam knew nothing about it, so he drank in the sweet delusion. "That'll do," said Hetty, after a little while. "Aunt wants me to leave some on the trees. I'll take 'em in now." "It's very well I came to carry the basket," said Adam, "for it 'ud ha' been too heavy for your little arms." "No, I could ha' carried it with both hands." "Oh, I dare say," said Adam, smiling, "and been as long getting into the house as a little and carrying a caterpillar. Have you ever seen those tiny fellows carrying things four times as big as themselves?" "No," said Hetty, indifferently, not caring to know the difficulties of ant life. "Oh, I used to watch 'em often, when I was a lad. But now, you see, I can carry the basket with one arm, as if it was an empty nutshell, and give you th other arm to lean on. Won't you? Such big arms as mine were made for little arms like yours to lean on." Hetty smiled faintly, and put her arm within his. Adam looked down at her, but her eyes were turned dreamily towards another corner of the garden. "Have you ever been to Eagledale?" she said, as they walked slowly along. "Yes," said Adam, pleased to have her ask a question about himself. "N years ago, when I was a lad, I went with father to see about some work there. It's a wonderful sight, rocks and caves such as you never saw in your life. I never had a right notion o' rocks till I went there." "How long did it take to get there?" "Why, it took us the best part o' 2 days walking. But it's nothing of a day's journey for anybody as has got a first-rate nag. The captain 'ud get there in 9 or 10 hours, I'll be bound, he's such a rider. And I shouldn't wonder if he's back again tomorrow. He's too active to rest long in that lonely place, all by himself, for there's nothing but a bit of a in I that part where he's gone to fish. I wish he'd got th estate in his hands. That 'ud be the right thing for him, for it 'ud give him plenty to do, and he'd ought well to, for all he's so young. He's got better notions o' things than many a man twice his age. He spoke very handsome to me th other day about lending me money to set up my business. And if things came round that way, I'd rather be beholden to him, nor to any man i' the world." Poor Adam was led on to speak about Arthur, because he thought Hetty would be pleased to know that the young squire was so ready to befriend him. The fact entered into his future prospects, which he would like to seem promising in her eyes. And it was true that Hetty listened with an interest which brought a new light into her eyes, and a half-smile upon her lips. "How pretty the roses are now," Adam continued, pausing to look at them. "I stole the prettiest, but I didn't mean to keep it myself. I think these as are all pink, and have got a finer sort o' green leaves, are prettier than the striped uns, don't you?" He set down the basket, and took the rose from his buttonhole. "It smells very sweet," he said. "Those striped buns have no smell. Stick it in your frock, and then you can put it in water after. It'd be a pity to let it fade. Hetty took the rose, smiling as she did so at the pleasant thought that Arthur could so soon get back if he liked. There was a flash of hope and happiness in her mind, and with a sudden impulse of gaiety she did, what S.E. had very often done before, stuck the rose in her hair a little above the left ear. The tender admiration in Adam's face was slightly shadowed by reluctant disapproval. Hetty's love of finery was just the thing that would most provoke his mother, and he himself disliked it as much as it was possible for him to dislike anything that belonged to her. "Ah," he said, "that's like the ladies in the pictures at the chase. They've mostly got flowers or feathers or gold things in their hair, but somehow I don't like to see 'em. They always put me in mind o' the painted women outside the shows at Redlison Fair. What can a woman have to set her off better than her own hair, when it curls so, like yours? If a woman's young and pretty, I think you can see her good looks all the better for her being plain dressed. Why, Dinah Morris looks very nice, for all she wears such a plain cap and gown. It seems to me as a woman's face doesn't want flowers. It's almost like a flower itself. I'm sure yours is." "Oh, very well," said Hetty, with a little playful pout, taking the rose out of her hair. "I'll put one o' Dinah's caps on when we go in, and you'll see if I look better in it. She left one behind, so I can take the pattern." "Nay, nay, I don't want you to wear a Methodist cap like Dinah's. I dare say it's a very ugly cap, and I used to think when I saw her here as it was nonsense for her to dress different to other people, but I never rightly noticed her till she came to see Mother last week, and then I thought the cap seemed to fit her face somehow as T.H. Acorn cup fits T.H. Acorn, and I shouldn't like to see her so well without it. But you've got another sort o' face. I'd have you just as you are now, without anything to interfere with your own looks. It's like when a man's singing a good tune you don't want to hear bells tinkling and interfering with the sound." He took her arm, and put it within his again, looking down on her fondly. He was afraid she should think he had lectured her, imagining, as we are apt to do, that as he had perceived all the thoughts he had only half expressed. And the thing he dreaded most was lest any cloud should come over this evening's happiness. For the world he would not have spoken of his love to Hetty yet, till this commencing kindness towards him should have grown into unmistakable love. In his imagination he saw long years of his future life stretching before him, blessed with the right to call Hetty his own. He could be content with very little at present. So he took up the basket of currants once more, and they went on towards the house. The scene had quite changed in the half hour that Adam had been in the garden. The yard was full of life now. Marty was letting the screaming geese through the gate, and wickedly provoking the gander by hissing at him. The granary door was groaning on its hinges as Alick shut it, after dealing out the corn. The horses were being led out to watering, amidst much barking of all the three dogs, and many ups from Tim the plowman, as if the heavy animals who held down their meek, intelligent heads, and lifted their shaggy feet so deliberately, were likely to rush wildly in every direction but the right. Everybody was come back from the meadow, and when Hetty and Adam entered the house place, Mr. Poyser was seated in the three-cornered chair, and the grandfather in the large armchair opposite, looking on with pleasant expectation, while the supper was being laid on the oak table. Mrs. Poyser had laid the cloth herself, a cloth made of homespun linen, with a shining checkered pattern on it, and of an agreeable whitey-brown hue, such as all sensible housewives like to see. None of your bleached top rack that would wear in two holes in no time, but good homespun that would last for two generations. The cold veal, the fresh lettuces, and the stuffed chine might well look tempting to hungry men who had dined at 12:30. On the large deal table against the wall there were bright pewter plates and spoons and cans, ready for Alick and his companions. For the master and servants ate their supper not far off each other, which was all the pleasanter, because if a remark about tomorrow morning's work occurred to Mr. Poyser, Alick was at hand to hear it. "Well, Adam, I'm glad to see ye," said Mr. Poyser. "Hat, ye have been helping Eddie to jeer the kerns, eh? Come, sit ye down. Why, it's pretty near a 3 week since ye had your supper with us, and the missus has got one of her rare stuffed chines. I'm glad ye're come." "Eddie," said Mrs. Poyser, as she looked into the basket of currants to see if the fruit was fine, "run upstairs and send Molly down. She's putting Toddy to bed, and I want her to draw th ale, for Nancy's busy yet I the dairy. You can see to the child. But wait ever did you let her run away from you along why Tommy for, and stuff herself why fruit as she can't eat a bit o' good victual?" This was said in a lower tone than usual, while her husband, Ann, was talking to Adam, for Mrs. Poyser was strict in adherence to her own rules of propriety, and she considered that a young girl was not to be treated sharply in the presence of a respectable man who was courting her. That would not be fair play. Every woman was young in her turn, and had her chances of matrimony, which it was a point of honor for other women not to spoil, just as one market woman who has sold her own eggs must not try to balk another of a customer. Hetty made haste to run away upstairs, not easily finding an answer to her aunt's question, and Mrs. Poyser went out to see after Marty and Tommy, and bring them in to supper. Soon they were all seated, the two rosy lads, one on each side, by the pale mother, a place being left for Eddie between Adam and her uncle. Alick too was come in, and was seated in his far corner, eating cold broad beans out of a large dish with his pocket knife, and finding a flavor in them which he would not have exchanged for the finest pineapple. "What a time, that jealous drawing th ale, to be sure," said Mrs. Poyser, when she was dispensing her slices of stuffed chine. "Think she sets the jug under and forgets to turn the tap, as there's nothing you can't believe o' them wenches. They'll set the empty kettle o' the fire, and then come an hour after to see if the water boils. She's drawin' for the men too," said Mr. Poyser. "He should'st ha' told her to bring our jug up first."
"Told her?"
said Mrs. Poyser. "Yes, I might spend all the wind I my body, and take the billows too, if I was to tell them gels everything as their own sharpness wanna tell them. Mr. Bede, will you take some vinegar with your lettuce? I right not. It spoils the flavor o' the chine, to my thinking. It's poor eating where the flavor o' the meat lies I the cruets. There's folks as make bad butter and truss into the salt he hide it." Mrs. Poyser's attention was here diverted by the appearance of Molly, carrying a large jug, two small mugs, and four drinking cans, all full of ale or small beer, an interesting example of the prehensile power possessed by the human hand. Poor Molly's mouth was rather wider open than usual, as she walked along with her eyes fixed on the double cluster of vessels in her hands, quite innocent of the expression in her mistress's eye. "Molly, I never knew your equals, to think o' your poor mother as is a widow, and I took you why as good as no character, and the times and times I've told you." Molly had not seen the lightning, and the thunder shook her nerves the more for the want of that preparation. With a vague alarm sense that she must somehow comport herself differently, she hastened her step a little towards the far deal table, where she might set down her cans, caught her foot in her apron, which had become untied, and fell with a crash and a splash into a pool of beer, whereupon a tittering explosion from Marty and Tommy, and a serious low from Mr. Poyser, who saw his draft of ale unpleasantly deferred. "There you go," resumed Mrs. Poyser, in a cutting tone, as she rose and went towards the cupboard, while Molly began dolefully to pick up the fragments of pottery. "Tease what I told you would come, over and over again, and there's your month's wage gone, and more, to pay for that jug as I've had I the house this 10 year, and nothing ever happened to't before, But the crockery you've broke sin here in TH house you've been ud make a parson swear God forgy me for saying so, and if it had been boiling word out o' the copper, it ud ha been the same, and you'd ha been scalded, and very like lame for life, as there's no knowing, but what you will be some day, if you go on. For anybody ud think you'd got the St. Vitus's dance, to see the things you've throwed down. It's a pity, but what the bits was stacked up for you to see, though it's neither seeing nor hearing as I'll make much odds to you anybody ud think you wore case hardened. Poor Molly's tears were dropping fast by this time, and in her desperation at the lively movement of the beer stream towards Alick's legs, she was converting her apron into a mop, while Mrs. Poyser, opening the cupboard, turned a blighting eye upon her. Ah, she went on, you'll do no good why crying and making more wet to wipe up. It's all your own willfulness, as I tell you, for there's nobody no call to break anything, if they'll only go the right way to work. But wooden folks had need a wooden things to handle. And here must I take the brown and white jug, as it's never been used three times this year, and go down I the cellar myself, and be like catch my death. And be laid up why inflammation. Dot dot. Mrs. Poyser had turned round from the cupboard with the brown and white jug in her hand, when she caught sight of something at the other end of the kitchen. Perhaps it was because she was already trembling and nervous, that the apparition had so strong an effect on her. Perhaps jug breaking, like other crimes, has a contagious influence. However it was, she stared and started like a ghost seer, and the precious brown and white jug fell to the ground, parting forever with its spout and handle. Did ever anybody see the like? She said, with a suddenly lowered tone, after a moment's bewildered glance round the room. He jugs are bewitched, I think. It's them nasty glazed handles they slip o'er the finger like a snail. Why, feast let thy own whip fly I thy face, said her husband, who had now joined in the laugh of the young ones. It's all very fine to look on and grin, rejoined Mrs. Poyser, but there's times when the crockery seems alive, and flies out o' your hand like a bird. It's like the glass, sometimes, o' crack. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.